So welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is August 25th, 2011, and tonight we're talking with educators associated with the Grinding New Lenses Project. Now, Grinding New Lenses is an exploration of teaching and learning systems thinking. This summer, 8 teachers from across 3 different writing projects actually spent a month in Chicago exploring the power of systems thinking and actually engaging students in some new opportunities to learn and make and write through a summer camp option connected with Grinding New Lenses. So this project began with a focus on TC's own learning about systems and systems thinking, followed with the summer camp with youth from the surrounding areas. It's one of the great opportunities that the NWP has had, brought to us by the MacArthur Foundation Digital Media and Learning Initiative that sponsors the Grinding New Lenses Project. It's organized by researchers from Indiana University, along with educators from the Institute of Play and Digital Youth Network, and this great set of Writing Project TCs. And tonight, we're really excited to be able to learn more about this and bring it to you on NWP Radio. I'm your host, Elise Eidman-Adol at the NWP in Berkeley, California. And tonight, we have a wonderful large crew with us from this project. We're going to be welcoming a number of folks. So we're welcoming Rafi Santo, graduate research assistant and doctoral student in Indiana, who's part of the university's learning sciences program and really working deeply with Grinding New Lenses. We have Laura Lee Stroud from the Central Texas Writing Project, Deirdre Floyd from the Central Texas Writing Project, Lori Sue Bell from Great Bear Writing Project, Eric Tuck from Oregon Writing Project at University of Oregon, Travis Powell from Oregon Writing Project at the University of Oregon, and Janie Brown, Great Bear Writing Project. So we also hope that in a little while we'll be able to hear from Kylie Pepler, who's an assistant professor in learning sciences at Indiana University, also working with the Grinding New Lenses program. So that's a huge crew, and I want to thank you all for joining us tonight. Is everybody there?
Great to be here.
That's great. Okay, we're going to start, if we could, because we want to be able to hear from all of you, so we're going to dive right in. And Rafi, if we could start with you. Before we go on, I think we need an introduction to Grinding New Lenses. And gosh, actually, I want to like ask you about this wonderful title. Sounds about something like learning to see differently, or what does it mean that we're grinding new lenses? Tell us that.
Absolutely. And first, thanks so much for having us on the show. It's really exciting to be here. That's really what this whole project is about, is creating new ways that youth can view the world, new lenses, so that they can start to see the world as a series of interconnected systems that are all at play in all the things that they look at in the world around them. So whether it's a visit to the aquarium, or thinking about the dynamics at play in the Civil War, looking at storytelling or poetry, thinking about environmental sustainability, all of those places are places where systems are at work, where things are interconnected in multiple ways, in ways that are unexpected, and where there's all sorts of dynamics that mean that things aren't quite as simple as they seem. It's really about complexity and understanding complexity. And so we're wanting to get youth to a place of thinking like designers of systems. And the way that we're doing that is having youth engage in different kinds of design activities, where we're hoping that by engaging in design of systems, they're going to be developing this kind of systems thinking disposition. And so the way that we've explored this is having kids design in 3 areas that are central to kind of youth digital media culture: video games, animation, and e-fashion or e-textiles.
So that was really a fascinating and a large range of activities. And one of the things that you're really pointing out is that systems and the complexity of systems are embedded everywhere, and you're taking a few lenses to get into them. But even that sounds... the design elements of video game, animation, e-fashion, even that seems like that could support, let alone systems thinking, kind of an expansive curriculum. This could go in a lot of ways.
And actually, originally, that's where the inspiration came from, was somebody who decided to design an entire school, in fact, around the idea of systems thinking and design. And that's Katie Salen and the Quest to Learn School in New York. And really, the project that we're doing is building off of that and saying, okay, it's great that someone went and did this expansive whole school around these ideas, but how do we actually make those ideas and activities more accessible across the country? How do we and also make it relevant to a whole bunch of different types of contexts, you know, whether you're in rural or urban settings, whether you've got kids that are Black or you've got kids that are white or Asian, how can we really think about getting this out there for a whole bunch of different kinds of educators?
Uh-huh.
And so what we're trying to do here is create smaller units based on the Quest to Learn model.
So, and I know that some of our listeners are familiar with Quest to Learn and may even have thought about it as a game-oriented school, which is one way to think about it. But the systems thinking, the permeation of systems thinking as a core idea is really, really deep and as central or more central to Quest to Learn even than for example, game. And so you're trying to take some of those ideas and find different ways to package them and take them to scale. I'm thinking it's possible. I want to just check whether Kylie's been able to join us. Kylie, are you there with us? Maybe not. I saw it looked like we might have gotten a caller. So, Robbie, if you would stick with us one more time then for a few more minutes. So we have the Quest to Learn School. It's a fully developed school. You're looking at ways to scale it. That's really part of what's behind this Grinding New Lenses grant, isn't it?
Yeah. And what we're trying to do in terms of systems thinking is I guess we've identified that as what we call kind of maybe the core literacy of the 21st century. We're really entering a period of time where complexity and interconnection is the defining feature, as opposed to, you know, maybe this thing that's happening in the background. It's really driving a lot of what's happening in the world. And we really think that school, unfortunately, has not yet done this well.
Uh-huh.
It's really been fairly kind of fragmented. You know, you've got your classic, you know, disciplinary divides, and systems thinking really is this way that it's a cross-disciplinary way of thinking, and it's also then an opportunity to maybe unify a lot of the different strands that kids are already working on throughout their day. So, it touches on science concepts, it touches on math concepts, it touches on history, literature, arts, and these are all areas that provide opportunities, and each of the strands that we've been working on, you know, touches on different pieces in each in different ways.
Right. So let me just check once again. Kylie, have you been able to join us?
Yes.
Yay. Okay. So Kylie and Rafe are colleagues working on this at the university. Kylie, it really is much also your project. So would you tell us this piece, if you could build on, I hope you were able to hear some of what Rafe was just saying, this notion of trying to take then something as interconnected and really focused on interconnectivity in a way that our curriculum isn't, and try to present that in ways that aren't necessarily about creating an entire school for kids. That's part of what it looks like you're trying to do in Grinding New Lenses. Did I get that right? To kind of package or modularize some of these opportunities to see something that is deep and interconnected.
Absolutely. And when you think about sort of real-world context and sort of the jobs that we all do, we never stop for a moment and artificially put on our math hat or our language arts hat. And so much of what students experience in the school day is the separation of the school curriculum. And, you know, that has a very long history, you know, arcing back to the Greeks and Roman era. But what we're trying to do is sort of re-envision what that schooling curriculum might look like and have interdisciplinary design-based problems for kids to be working on that allow them to pull on all of these different kinds of traditions at the same time, so that kids that might not have thought they were interested in math suddenly are using math and able to handle some very complex problems.
And so how is it then, tell the story, I know but our listeners don't, tell the story about how this all got connected to the National Writing Project, because I'm thinking that we probably have some listeners saying, okay, I get that, and where does the NWP come in?
Well, you know, we were really, really, really fortunate. We had sort of conceptualized the project and knew that we wanted to co-develop curriculum with the help of teachers and people that were very deeply connected to the classroom. And when we had just sort of started to embark on this, we realized that actually it's a really tough design task, and we needed to find a partner that could really help us not only, you know, test out the curriculum, but also help us to reconceptualize what wasn't working and how we could further push both on system thinking, but also on the disciplinary content. And we were lucky enough that the MacArthur Foundation had connected us with you, Elise, from the get-go, and we have just felt incredibly blessed from the start of the project to be able to sort of co-design and co-develop these materials over the course of the last 18 months, and we certainly will continue to work with the National Writing Project from this point forward in the project as well.
So that, thank you, Kylie and Rafi, both for that. We want to have you all come back in a little bit later in the show and tell us about some of the future plans and where the project's going. But we certainly want to hear from this wonderful group of teacher consultants. Who are some of those folks then who have been joining with you to try and think about this design task, this curricular design task? So we really want to get to them. And actually, folks who are on the phone, when I think about you all as taking a month out of your summer to work on this project, it sounds pretty wonderful to me, like a systems thinking summer camp. So I have this picture of you all together in Chicago for a month. I know that you were staying in dorms together and, you know, and doing this work with kids. We really want to get a feel for what it's like. And as I understand it, there were three different curricular modules that were being worked on and tested. There was one for GameStar Mechanic, one for Short Circuits, and one for Scratch. And those are all things that some of our listeners may know, but others might find, you know, even the ideas behind any one of those strands new. So let's unpack some of what it was like and some of these strands of work that you were doing and learning about and working on with kids. And let's start with Deirdre and Travis, the two of you who worked on this GameStar Mechanic module. If you could come in now, Deirdre, would you tell us a little bit about this module that you worked on and what it was like to use it at camp?
Absolutely. GameStar Mechanic, it's a game design platform. It's been created by the Institute of Play and Eline Media. And it's a platform where students are able to play and design and share and publish their own games, all the while having maximum flexibility and a deep emphasis on learning, and then at the same time, it's fostering those critical 21st century skills such as systems thinking and problem solving, creativity, collaboration. It has them working with the digital media literacies and then also motivation for STEM. So students were able to play along with that, and I also need to mention that there was initial funding for GameStar Mechanic through the MacArthur Foundation, so
right.
They have strong ties to everything that we've done this summer.
Everything in here, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
No,
please, go ahead.
I was just going to say the way that we used it in the camp this summer was that we allowed students the opportunity to start from the beginning of the project and work their way through to design their own games, and we really talked about the different elements that were needed to create games and talked about relationships and how they were important to building the games. You know, the students have to start with looking at a graphic novel to work their way into it. So just really having them look at what is the storyline behind the games that they were designing.
And, you know, I forgot to have you all say this, but tell our listeners what age of young people you were working with and about how many.
We were working with incoming 6th and 7th graders. And in our particular strand, the maximum number of students that we had was about 13 to 14.
Which is probably sounds absolutely ideal to so many teachers to have a great colleague to work with and 13 or 14 young people there in the summer because they want to be. And they're there doing this game design work. And I can see also a wonderful piece that from what you talked about in terms of what we want to often teach in writing and literature about story arcs, and you were working with graphic novels. Tell us a little bit, Travis, maybe you tell us a little bit about how this sets up systems thinking for young people.
Well, systems thinking when they're in their environment of playing video games and recognizing top-down and platformer games, they start to see how those relationships, and it's about those components of those games and how those relationships interact with one another to accomplish a goal. And so it was an excellent opportunity for them to use that leverage point of video games to demonstrate how a system works in its totality and to break it down and unpack it and to reassemble it.
Because a game is a system.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't play with one element of it without it affecting everything else. What is it that, for either one of you, jump in and just say sort of while you watched young people do this sort of work with game design and thinking about just some observations about how game design might fit into other things that you're interested in teaching or that you might bring back from that. Do either of you want to throw in sort of like an insight that you developed by watching these young people?
Well, I guess I would say for me, it gave me a stronger understanding of systems thinking. I was kind of a systems thinking newbie when I arrived in Chicago, and just to see the way that students thought about putting their games together and their final products, to really see their thinking come to life, it really helped me to understand that systems thinking a little bit better, and then helped me to think of ways to foster that within my classroom, which I have second graders, but still I think it's important to start early getting them on the track of thinking in that manner.
And Travis, how about you?
And for me, it was about being a lifelong learner and role modeling, and then participating in the play edit mode with the students, and then being collaborative with the students. And so it was excellent for the opportunities that it created, as well as it fostered people working in groups. And so the play edit, and then sharing with your neighbor, and then getting productive feedback, and then the iteration of that game design allowed, it was good.
Well, so now Game Star Mechanic is a platform that that our listeners can go visit and see whether this is something they'd like to work with, both for themselves, because it's fun for anybody to be working with Game Star Mechanic, or for their own teaching. We're going to have links for that in the chat room and in the archive for the show. But let's move on then to a second module. There's a module, a curricular piece on short circuits. So I think Lori Sue and Laura Lee, you two worked with this module. Lori Sue, would you tell us a little bit about what this short circuits module was?
Yes, I'd be glad to. The short circuits curriculum actually has the students engaged with using soft circuits and e-textiles to introduce the components of system thinking concurrently while they learn the components of circuitry, switches, and story elements. So it's like as they're learning the circuit, they're also learning systems thinking because it's very applicable to, you know, the system as a whole, the components, and the interactivity between the components. And the students could immediately apply these systems thinking concepts to the concept that was being taught. And this allowed them to develop the base knowledge of systems thinking, which I think helped them be successful when they moved into like GameStar Mechanic and Scratch, which to me are a little higher level of systems thinking. So this was a really good introduction because it was very hands-on and very visual for the students.
Go ahead, Lori Sue.
I was just going to tell you about the different challenges they did. In the first challenge, the students were just introduced to the components of the systems thinking and the simple circuit. So they actually made a simple circuit that could actually manipulate it, change the interactions. You know, they could look at the load, what happens, you know, They were problem solving. They were looking at all the little incidences that could happen that could change the system.
And so, probably there are a lot of listeners, too, that do teach some circuitry and may have done something like making circuits with students, but then you took it in some other directions in addition to just making the circuit.
Because we are writing project teachers, you know, we thought it's very important that there's a writing component to this also. So we had the students take their simple circuit and they created a puppet. They developed a character for their puppet. And then we paired them, and they had to write a short scenario about how these two creatures met and how they would interact with each other. And the kids performed skits. And they just loved it. I mean, it was wonderful. And then from there, we moved into the second challenge, which they kept the same puppet, but we moved to the literary concept of story.
Yeah, and before you had said circuits and stories, and I think that's actually something that isn't always put together, circuitry and story.
Right. So the students wrote stories about the creature they created.
Uh-huh.
And we discussed the elements that make up a good story and how each element is interconnected and interdependent upon the others. And then we discussed that a story is indeed a system, you know, and all the components have to be working correctly in order for you to have a good story.
Uh-huh.
So the students made storyboards,
uh-huh.
and there was another component to the storyboard. It was a recordable sound module. It was attached
uh-huh.
to the board, and the kids can make sound and actually, like, record a voice or a noise on it. So also, we could look at that module because it's a system also.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they looked at the components of that. And then we moved into the third challenge. And it recalled circuitry. Only in that lesson, we introduced the concept of a switch or a leverage point.
Mm-hmm.
And their students made bracelets that had a parallel circuit with a switch. When it was shut, it lit. And when you opened it, the light went off. So there, the students were able to apply system thinking concept to a circuit easily with this challenge. And the fourth challenge had students making, they were called electricity t-shirts,
uh-huh.
and they had LED lights in them. And the students programmed these programmable pods called a lily pad, and they had three LEDs that were programmed. And these LEDs were programmed using another program called ModKit.
Uh-huh.
And this allowed the students to actually determine when they blinked, how often they blinked, how fast they blinked, and they made their own design on their shirt. And by this time, they were really good at, had a really good, deep understanding of what systems thinking is.
And
as it pertained to not only the circuits, but they were able to discuss the components, the interactions, leverage
uh-huh.
points, iterations or changes. They had a really good base knowledge.
So, Laura Lee, you also were part of this module, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So, it's really interesting to see how in these four challenges there are things that I could imagine many of us as teachers might be doing individually, like working with showing what a circuit is in, let's say, a science class, or doing the storyboarding or talking about stories as a system. But this layering and movement among, you know, from circuits, from electricity to stories, back to another type of circuitry, that layering of systems in different places really seems to set up this notion that systems are everywhere. What did you observe about young people sort of experiencing these different layers of systems work in this module?
Well, we were just amazed at how many connections that the kids were able to make to systems in their lives. For instance, one of the little students, she was amazing. She made connections to her mom's beauty salon, and she was always making connections back to that. Like little prerequisite skills for the e-textiles was one of the skills was a running stitch. And so we were asking, you know, well, have you participated in art? Do you sew? And she was like, no. And then she was like, wait a minute, I do sew because my mom in her shop, they sew on hair pieces. So she was making connections to that system, into the money system, into all different types of systems within her mother's business, and applying it to what she was learning. So that was really neat to see.
And of course, it opens up, your example just shows it. It opens up both that a young person that maybe is or isn't, you don't have to be interested in circuitry. You don't have to be interested in sort of engineering style things. You could come into an interest through the sewing or through the hair weaving or through a number of things or the story itself. Did you find that kind of a more expansive group of young people were able to find a hook somewhere in because of the way that these different systems were blended?
Yes, this, we worked with a very diverse group of children. I think the only thing that they did have that most of them had in common was the area in which they lived. I mean, but even that was different because they came from all different parts of Chicago as well as outside of Chicago in the suburbs. Some children took the train in or, you know, the Metra, or were brought in by their parents in a car, you know, but traveled a ways to get there. So they were all from different socioeconomic backgrounds and had different funds of knowledge that they brought to the project. But everything, because we live within systems and because systems are so ingrained in us and we may not explicitly have them pointed out, but when they were pointed out, all of the students made connections and also helped each other to understand the thinking and to complete the modules as we went.
And from what you were saying, and actually from what both of you were saying, by the time you get to that final T-shirt with lights going on and off and such, it sounds like there's a little bit of programming there, too. Is that the case?
Yes. Yes. And there's a lot of iteration and revision that had to go into the final product. And oftentimes the final product, they'd find that it wasn't working as they wanted to. So they would have to go back into either the mod kit program or go back and look at their stitches, look at their to see their battery, to see if the connections were right. So there were lots of steps along the way for a problem, you know, to occur. So it that final product, you had to go, if it wasn't working, the kids would have to go back and figure out how to fix it.
As I guess also all of us as adult learners learning to do these skills
are doing the same.
Well, let's get to the third module, which was a module on Scratch. Again, or using Scratch, again, something that probably some listeners may know, but is going to be new to a range of people. So Janie, you worked on this with a fellow TC, Trina Williams, the Scratch model. Would you give us kind of an orientation to what Scratch is and how it was used at the camp?
Sure. Scratch is a digital storytelling program. And I think what I really liked about it is the cute little the orange enthusiastic cat that was the nice sprite and within this computer program. And it allowed the students to be able to create the stories with animation and sounds, and I think they were really amazed at the fact that they could record their own voices to create more animation in the story and to create more interest in the stories. One of the key components to the systems part was where they used the blocks. There were blocks there that instructed the components, the sprites, as to what they should do. And so they had blocks that would allow the sprites or characters to move in different directions or to speak and to do different things that the students wanted to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so they basically observed their communities and started to look at all the different challenges within their communities, different problems or things that they noticed about their community and saw it as a system, and then they were able to take those systems and create a story, which was very fascinating for them.
And so with Scratch, which is like GameStar Mechanics, something that teachers can sign up for and can use with their classes anywhere, it's a kind of simple opportunity to do programming, to actually make, as you said, sprites, be able to make animations out of characters. So in addition to the story writing, you had community analysis and story writing, and then really, in a way, without having to use programming languages, they're learning to program, aren't they?
Exactly, exactly. And the terminology was, I considered it to be, I thought at the beginning it was going to be challenging, but it turned out that the students were ready. They were eager to get that information. Things like vicious cycle or virtuous cycle, looking at the positive and negative outcomes within your community if you make an alteration in your community, if you decided to iterate something in your community. That was really fascinating for them.
So I heard you use the word actually fascinating a couple of times. It sounds like they were amazingly eager to work with this program.
Yes. Many of the students, when they figured out what type of stories that they could create within the Scratch program, we started to see stories much like creating a story to solve the pollution problems or to solve the violence within their community if they had violence there where they lived. And we also saw them trying to create stories that told about them losing their school programs, such as art.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we saw that, we just realized that those students were addressing serious issues in a more creative and technically inclined way.
So there's so much more that I think I really want to ask you all about these modules, and I know at the end we're going to be able to hear from Kylie and Rafi about some of the ways that all of us can access some of this. But there's another question in my mind and maybe in some listeners' mind. After this amazing month where you got to learn some of this stuff yourself and then have this kind of dream opportunity to work with a small group of enthusiastic young people with this exciting work, I've got to ask about, you know, what happens when you come home? What comes back to your writing project or to your school or to your class after that month? I'm sure that after the month you had to spend some time, like, catching up on your sleep or whatever. But then what happens when you come back? So I'd love to hear some stories about that. Like, Laura Lee, I think there's some work that you've done already at home. Would you tell us about that?
Yes, when I came back, I had to facilitate a workshop for struggling readers and writers in Temple ISD, and I hate the term struggling readers because it just implies, you know, deficit first off. And so I had them, because I struggled all summer with learning circuitry.
Did
you name it, I struggled. I was able to sit in the seat of a learner, and I knew that that would give them an immediate feel of struggle, because as adults we all function in our strengths most of the time. And so I gave them a challenge, like it had been given to us, to make the LED light up in 1 minute with all of the components that they had. And boy, did they struggle. They couldn't do it in 1 minute, so I gave them two. And then we just reflected on what do learners need when they're struggling. And so that was a really good connection that I would like to bring into the writing project, everything that I've learned through demos and also, you know, with the advanced TC.
Yeah. I love that idea of because it really is true. We do get to, as adults, spend most of our time in the areas where we feel comfortable. And so it is important to remember what it's like to be learning something new. That's a great idea. Eric, I think we haven't been able to hear from you yet, but so tell us a little bit about bringing this stuff back.
Yeah, here on the West Coast, we actually haven't started school yet, so I haven't had much opportunity to actually implement anything. But, you know, I've always struggled with finding meaningful projects in the language arts classroom to develop process expository writing. And so I think this is going to lend itself very well to that process. You know, having students journal their exploration along the way, what struggles did they have, how they talked to their peers and found ways around their problems. And then having using that journal to complete a exposition at the end, expository writing, process writing, whatever, and then publish that. There's we learned of a great place for e-textiles called Lily Pond that students can create the work, and then they can tell the viewers or instructed viewers with their expository writing what exactly what their process was and how they did it. There's also another great site called Instructables and another one called Make from Make Magazine. These are great audiences for this kind of these kind of activities. So I'm really looking forward to that. The great folks from Indiana, Kylie and them, gave me a lot of supplies to come back with and to do a solar mobile project with my students. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
And the point that you make as you talk about these places where young people who engage in this work can do that writing and publishing, those are real audiences who are going to take what that writing is and then try to implement it and iterate off of it. So these are real audiences. These are young people doing real make work and publishing to other makers who are going to build on their work. It's a great way to insert that kind of writing in the classroom.
Absolutely.
Travis, so you're in Oregon as well, and so there you are waiting for school to start, as we are here in California. What have you been thinking about bringing back?
I'm looking at curriculum development in the direction of using STEM or STEAM or STREAM, sciences, technology, and engineering and mathematics, and taking a look at the charter school having students create using the game design to illustrate concepts in those fields, taking a look at from U-Build to ecology to broken systems and seeing what that's going to look like. And there are many possibilities, and this is a great platform to utilize in the classroom because then they become co-authors in that curriculum development when they're learning these concepts.
And you've really pointed to, of course, the centerpiece of the work in the summer to opportunities to do more systems thinking. Talk a little bit, Lori Sue, talk a little bit about, because you've been thinking about systems thinking and where systems thinking could fit in your work back home.
Well, we do a summer camp here called Camp Writer's Block.
Camp Writer's Block.
Yes, and we have teachers from the Great Bear Writing Project here in Central Arkansas. We have them come and do quality lessons, and other teachers sit and listen to them. And I thought this would be a wonderful opportunity to take this systems thinking writing story module into Camp Writer's Block during the summer. Also, the first week, we are in school here. The first week of school, we created our creatures. And every week, the students will have to write a different story that's centered around their creature. And by the end of the year, we will have a massive story of this creature. So I'm pretty excited about that. But I also think of the possibilities for our site because we've lost a lot of federal funding, you know, and I'm thinking that we need some cutting edge. We offer in-service opportunities from our site, and we need some cutting edge research, some cutting edge lessons out there that these teachers want that are high quality, high interest, and really get the students really involved in what's going on.
Wow. It's absolutely true, both for our sites, and I also have to say I'm picturing with all those creatures and the stories growing the entire year, it's almost like a comics or graphic novel kind of universe of characters that will keep – go ahead.
My students love graphic novels. Huh? I cannot keep them on the bookshelves. And that storyboard is just like that graphic novel.
So it will be a mythic, a huge mythic universe that will be created out of your classroom. It sounds wonderful.
Yes, yes.
Well, let's bring in, given the time, I think, Rafi and Kylie, we need the two of you to come back in now. I guess what you've just heard is really testament to how people can have a deep experience with this kind of work and then want to bring it back and want to take it in different places. And that's another theme of grinding lenses, making it possible for more people to be able to take some of these ideas, some of this learning, some of these ways of working. Maybe you can't do it as a whole school all the time, but you can bring pieces of it back. So let's hear a little bit about, go back to that. There are some, Kylie, let's since you've been able to join us now, there's some resource development work. Could you give us a picture kind of what the project is trying to do in terms of resources? And then, Rafi, I know you're very much connected to those. We could hear from you very specifically what's being built. But, Kylie, what's kind of the big picture?
Sure. Well, we're hoping to make these resources that have been sort of co-developed with the National Writing Project available to teachers at, you know, across the country. And so right now we're looking at several different publishers to try to find a partner that could help help bring those materials to various classrooms. And so we're looking at something like a book publication that could be commercially available. We're going to try and keep those things, of course, especially given the fiscal climate, as low cost as possible. And then we'll also make a set of materials, like the worksheets, things like that, available for free and downloadable. And we're hoping maybe to partner with DigitalIS, and we're exploring several different possibilities right now.
Because it's really about making this as broadly available. We got kind of a different opportunities for people. All of this is actually two relatively low cost for folks. Scratch and GameStar Mechanic, and these are not the kinds of things that schools can't do unless they have huge resources invested. They're really made to be platforms for a lot of young people and teachers to learn on, aren't they?
Exactly. You know, when we were looking around, we were trying to leverage digital media that was commercially low cost or freely available. And then we were also looking at things that were really exciting for kids. And so I think both game design, Scratch, and digital storytelling, and you think about the e-textiles work and just the whole
Lily Pond, which
that's
was
going
mentioned.
On now. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so all of those communities have a deep commitment to making things as low cost and free as long as possible.
And, of course, listeners, we're putting all those links in the chat room, and we'll make sure that they're also there in the show archive if you're listening to this as a on-demand episode. Rafi, tell us what the next steps are. There was this wonderful month, and a lot of the curriculum that had been developed and already refined, going through some more processes, more refinement. What happens next?
Well, you know, like so many of the teachers said, you know, this was a huge learning process for them. Really, this is also a massive learning process for us about really what kind of works and how to go forward. And so right now what we're doing is to take all the lessons, all the great insights that, you know, all the teachers on this call and others who weren't able to make it provided for us, and kind of integrate them into all the materials that we're putting together. And then from there, like Kylie said, we're looking to publish. But, you know, before we actually get to the publication point, we really want to actually bring the work that we've been doing to sites across the country. And so we're actually, you know, this is a small plug moment, we're actually actively looking for NWP partners that are interested in testing out some of the pre-published materials we've developed so far come the new year, come 2012. And a lot of really what we're interested in there is to find out, what does it look like when people take up these materials on their own? You know, we had this great opportunity this summer. We're able to do, you know, this two-week intensive training, just like, you know, loads of time. But we know ultimately, you know, that's not the way that things will achieve scale. You know, there's not going to be a central kind of professional development institute. I mean, who knows? But it's unlikely given the current fiscal climate. And we really want to see, you know, does the stuff that's being created, will it stand on its own two legs when people just take it up on their own? And so that's kind of what we're looking for right now. So when people, if there are people that are interested in getting involved in the 2012 school year to test out some of the stuff in their own classrooms, again, with, you know, less support, won't have that deep training, but, you know, it will be really, really important to the project to know what does it look like when people take it up. You can get in touch with us at grindinglenses@gmail.com. And you can just tell us a bit about, you know, who you are, you know, where are you, what grade level do you teach, what subject area do you teach, and we'll be, you know, getting in touch with people over the course of the next couple of months to be involved in that.
So we'll be sure to get that also in the chat room, and it's grindinglenses@gmail.com. So it's very memorable. That's great. And are there any kind of parameters or anything like that? If people are saying, "Wow, I'm interested. I'm not sure if I can, you know, do this, you know, all day in my classroom, or do I need a couple of weeks to do a unit? Could it be an after school setting? What parameters would you be interested in, if there are any?"
Well, yeah, and that's a great question. You know, I think what we're really aiming for here is for stuff that's as modular as possible. So we have developed, and what the teachers did this summer was kind of, you know, these kind of 20-hour sort of longer experience. But really, we're trying to make this a resource. You know, can you do a couple of projects and still get some good bang for your buck? That's what we're hoping for. What is probably necessary for most of them, so at least for Scratch and GameStar Mechanic, you definitely need to have computers. Mm-hmm. Available, and so that's and for GameStar, definitely computers with internet connections and modern browsers and things like that. And for eTextiles, you know, you need to get those materials, but you can do a whole lot of it actually without computers. The part where they start to get into programming does need computers, but aside from that, a lot of it is just having lots of materials, lots of conductive thread, and, you know, felt, and just having a messy willingness to have a messy classroom. That's a parameter for short circuits, messy classroom.
And the best kind of mess, the art studio kind of mess of
definitely
good stuff and good work. So that, thank you, that is great. And I'm guessing that that you will get some folks who are writing to you who are interested in being part of taking these materials through even more piloting and more work. But there might also be some folks listening who aren't thinking necessarily about what they might want to do with young people. Maybe they're not in the classroom right now, but they're just kind of intrigued by learning more about systems thinking. Could you talk about some of the things, some of the options or tools or the kinds of things that you would say we could use to learn more about systems thinking, or that were part of that wonderful opportunity that all of you on the phone call had to just learn as adults first before you went into the classroom? What would you recommend?
That's a great question. So a lot of the place that we got inspiration from for this, especially the digital storytelling strand of with Scratch, was a book called When a Butterfly Sneezes. That's all about using children's stories to understand systems in the world. And aside from, you know, the storytelling angle in that book, it's just a very accessible piece. You know, the introductory chapters just really spell out in an accessible way what systems are and how they work. For people that want to go a bit deeper than that, you know, we're academics, we're researchers, so we read a lot of, you know, these academic articles. But some of the ones that are both more accessible but also go deeper, there's a great one called Thinking About Systems by John Sturman and also Linda Booth Sweeney, who wrote When a Butterfly Sneezes. And what that article talks a lot about is what kinds of misconceptions both adults and youth have about the way that systems work before they even get any kind of intervention around it. And it's a really, I know for me, it's one of the most useful articles I've read, just to kind of get a sense of like, oh, how do I talk about this stuff or teach about this stuff in a way that isn't getting us to default into, you know, this kind of classic, you know, things are linear in the world, one thing follows the next in this very predictable fashion. You know, systems are about messes and they're about complexity, but that's not the way our minds usually work. And so that article really gets wonderfully into that. I'll add another one in for people that are really a lot more interested in kind of agency and community change and social change. There's a fantastic piece called 12 Kinds of Leverage or 12 Forms of Leverage by a woman named Vanella Meadows. And that's really what are the most effective ways to change systems.
Uh-huh.
There are all these systems in the world, and there are some ways, you know, you're just looking at the government right now, there's a constant, you know, constant tweaking of things, but oftentimes it's not very effective. And she really outlines, okay, what are the effective ways to get its systems changed?
And, of course, what you've just said points out, reminds us all that that systems are everywhere. So there are systems that are you know, in every kind of classroom that would be of interest to people who are interested in politics and government, who are interested in the operations of society, certainly in the science classroom, in the literary work, in the artistic work. So for all of us, really, systems thinking has a place in sort of any curricular area. And you've just given us kind of a sense of several different readings that really point in all those different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. And if people are interested just in some of the platforms that we've mentioned, you know, there's a great article just on Scratch called Programming for All by Miss Resnick, who was the kind of lead person designing Scratch, and Kylie actually was also on that team. And if people are interested in GameStar Mechanic, Katie Salen, who is also one of the designers of GameStar Mechanic and Quest to Learn, wrote an article called Gaming Literacies that you can do a search for on Google about GameStar generally. And then her colleague, Robert Torres, has done a lot of research on GameStar Mechanic and systems thinking and using GameStar to promote systems thinking. And those are all things that are available online.
And thank you, Rafi. And I'm going to ask actually in a minute for all of you who participated as teachers in the summer to be able to put in some last thoughts. But Kylie, if you could also talk a little bit about the circuitry work and the soft circuitry and e-textiles, that theme as well. And tell us a little bit about Lily Pond, which was mentioned.
Sure. Well, soft circuits, you know, can be kind of hard for listeners that haven't heard of materials, but you can imagine, you know, some conductive thread that looks like ordinary thread, but it's actually interlaced with some metals that you can actually sew instead of using wires to create circuits. And so at the very, very simplistic level, you know, we've talked about sort of the simple circuitry kinds of things that you do in sort of an introductory science class where you have the battery and you have the LED and maybe you have a switch to turn that LED on and off. And so you can actually sew that into any type of fabric. So the kids, you know, they'll sew those into purses, into ties, onto hats or T-shirts and elsewhere. But you can imagine actually that circuit actually can only go on and off. So when you add the lily pad in there, you're actually adding a small microprocessor computer chip. And so that's what the teachers have been describing that you can actually program. So you can control the lights, you can control sound, you can sense the temperature in the room, you can, it's just sort of like the soft side of robotics. And the thing that's really cool about these materials that were developed by Leah Buechle that's now at MIT Media Lab is that they're completely washable. And so, you know, I think the kids find that so fascinating that they can have a little computer in their clothing that they can wash. And so they're really excited to be able to sew these kinds of things in. And you can imagine actually, you know, there's no better identity text than clothing that kids wear.
Uh-huh.
And so when you think about really trying to get kids to think about themselves as technologists and to show that to the world, there's some real advantages to working with physical media. So the kids, you know, they can wear the T-shirts that they just made, the hats that they just produced, and it starts these lovely conversations. You know, we have the parents come in, and the parents were just so impressed with the stuff that the kids were actually making with the e-textiles. And you can imagine peer groups, the kinds of conversations you might want to have with the things that the kids are producing on the screen, but all of a sudden e-textiles can actually leave the screen and travel with the kids into their everyday life. So that's really exciting. Lily Pond, a new site that we're collaborating in the development with Leah Buechle on, and we hope to have future involvement from the National Writing Project there as well, because there's just so many rich connections to process writing, to critique, to thinking about and sort of reflecting on what you're doing, that site will be continued to be developed over the next few years, but it's in a very nice sort of beta phase right now. So any of the listeners that are interested in using these materials can go to sparkfun.com and just search for LilyPond or LilyPad, and you'll come up with all of the different kinds of pieces that you can play with. And then once you create something, you can actually upload it to the community. There's kids there that are willing to help if you encounter a problem. And there's similar to a lot of other rating systems that you might see out there, where there's you know, the community is loving certain things, and a lot of the workshop projects actually from the summer are already posted there. So
wow, well that's great. We are so close to running out of time, and so I really want to invite though each one of you teacher consultants who were there in the summer. Though alas, you'll have even less than a minute. If you wanted to throw in a final thought about this experience and what you would take from it, or what you'd say to your colleagues in the National Writing Project, so I'll just give you a call out and real fast, just to hear a last thought from. Let's start with Janie. Janie, any last thoughts from you?
Says Scratch is a grand opportunity to boost students' academic confidence and increase their joy of writing again.
Fab. Travis.
There are many possibilities of utilizing gaming to allow students to become creators, as well as evaluators, editors, designers, storytellers, and writers in this platform.
Wow. Eric.
Yeah, even though with the e-textiles it's kind of daunting at first, I encourage everyone to give it a try.
Lori.
Grinding new lenses has just changed the way I view concepts of myself and even the world. And I know because I've been changed, I'm going to impact my students. And I'm just thankful for the opportunity to have been a part of this.
Oh. Deidre.
I think Travis already said quite a bit about GameStar and just how wonderful it is. And I, like Lori, just want to say that this was an awesome opportunity this summer, and I was so fortunate to be a part of it.
Laura Lee.
I just want to say amen to what everybody said. And thank you, National Writing Project and Grinding New Lenses, the researchers, for giving us the opportunity.
Wow. And I just also want to say from all of you, I've really gotten the feeling that as you worked through this as teacher consultants and you thought about this in relationship to your teaching and to your sites, it didn't feel like something that couldn't fit with a writing project. It feels as if you've all sort of seen how creating and authoring and making in these systems is really something that we can be about. I'm hearing, and actually you all said it, it's a forward way, a forward-looking way to think about what it means to be a creator and an author in the world to come. So did I get that right? Do you all see that there's a place of writing projects for this kind of thinking and this kind of work?
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, listeners, there you heard that, and there's in the chat room right now, there are plenty of links, and we will be sure that they're posted with the show archive for anybody who's listening to this as an on-demand episode. You can find that show archive at www.nwp.org to get all these links and to go investigate this. Also, I would say if you're part of NWP Connect, the new online connection that we all have together as writing projects, where we can share content with each other and participate in discussions and blog and be connected as writing project folks. A lot of these people from the summer have already posted blogs, so if you actually go to NWP Connect at connect.nwp.org and participate or join and become a member, if you do a search for Grinding New Lenses, you're going to find some blogs that were written by all the folks you're hearing tonight about their summer experience as well. And so we can also keep posting many of these links there. I want to thank you all for joining us tonight. This has been a great introduction to just a huge and fascinating body of work and some really great tools that we can be using with young people. And I would say, actually, because I like playing with them myself, that even adults can go play with Scratch and GameStar Mechanic and see how all this stuff works as well. So, listeners, isn't it great? And be a learner together, just the same way we're asking our young people to do. Hey, thank you all. This was a great show. We really appreciate you joining us tonight. And we're about out of time, but I just want to thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And good night to you and to listeners.
Good night.
Good night.